Have you ever found yourself listening to a piece of music by Strauss, and then after a few minutes, you start to wonder, what Strauss am I listening to? Funny enough, many people do. Was it Johann Strauss who wrote the tone poem, also Sprach Zarathustra, used in the Stanley Kubrick film 2001, A Space Odyssey? And who wrote the famous Blue Danube Waltz? Was it Johann Strauss I or Johann Strauss II? Or was it Joseph Strauss, or Edward Strauss, or Richard Strauss, or Franz Strauss? It can get confusing. So here is the short story. Johann Strauss I, who was a great waltz composer in his own right, was born in the year 1804 in Vienna, and he had three sons, Edward Strauss, Joseph Strauss, and Johann Strauss II. During their lifetimes, Joseph and Edward were very capable musicians, and they wrote many works in the field of waltzes. But their youngest brother, Johann II, known as the Waltz King, would be the one who became the most famous of the bunch, producing works such as Tales from the Vienna Woods, The Blue Danube, and Die Fledermaus, or The Bat. Now, around the 1860s in Munich, Germany, another Strauss became known in the music world. His name was Franz Strauss. At the time, Franz was one of the finest horn players, guitarists, and clarinetists in all of Europe. And eventually, he would become a bitter enemy of Richard Wagner and his music. When Wagner came to Munich to prepare the orchestra for the world premiere of Tristan and Isolde, during one of the rehearsals, Franz Strauss got up and actually walked out of the rehearsal mumbling under his breath that he hated Wagner's music and that Wagner was basically a moron, quietly but loud enough for Wagner to hear. Right before he walked out, Strauss had played a horn line from Tristan so perfectly and beautifully that after the incident, Wagner could not understand how someone so great at playing the horn could hate his music so much. When Wagner confronted Franz Strauss, he answered with these words, quote, "The way I play has absolutely nothing to do on how I like music." Some years later, in the year 1883, after conductor Hermann Levy announced to the assembled orchestra that Richard Wagner had just died, everyone in the orchestra, in respect for Wagner's death, rose to their feet in tribute. Except for, that is, Franz Strauss. This same quirky horn player was married to a woman by the name of Josephine, who was also a musician. And the two, later on, had three children. One of these children would be the great Richard Strauss. No relation to the Strauss Waltz family. Ironically, in his life, Richard Strauss would become one of the biggest advocates and interpreters of Wagner's music, and his father Franz lived long enough to witness this. Richard Strauss was born to Franz and Josephine Strauss on June the 11th, 1864, in Munich, Germany. He was known as a wonder child, and he began taking piano lessons from his mother when he was a mere 4 years old. After a short period of time with these lessons, the young Richard began to advance so fast that his father Franz took over his gifted son's musical education, and he hired a teacher who was actually known as a harpist by the name of August Tombow to instruct the child at the piano. 2 years later, at the age of six, Richard Strauss began to compose music. The first of these beginning works was a polka for the piano, and the second was a Christmas song. At this point, when Strauss would go to elementary school, he would wrap his books in manuscript paper so that he could compose while sitting in class. And although his parents were extremely enthused with their son's incredible musical gifts, they absolutely wanted their son to get the best academic education possible, and they monitored every move that he made. And because of this, Strauss used this balance of music and general education throughout his career. After his elementary years, Strauss went on to high school, where he remained until he was 18 years old. During this period, aside from his piano studies, He studied the violin under Benno Walter and harmony and composition under F.W. Meyer. At this point, some of Richard Strauss's works were beginning to be performed. Two of the works were heard at a choral concert at his high school, and in the year 1880, three of his vocal works were heard in Munich. This was Strauss's first appearance as a composer in a professional concert. On March the 14th, 1881, at the age of 17, Strauss's violin teacher, Benno Walter, led a string quartet and performed Richard Strauss's first string quartet in A major. And 3 weeks later, Hermann Levy conducted Strauss's first symphony in D minor. And with this, many began to believe that a true artist was in the making. At the age of 18 years old, Richard Strauss entered the University of Munich, hoping to attain a degree in philosophy. But, after 1 year of this, Richard Strauss began to give all of his attention to his music. And after leaving the university, he traveled to Berlin to hear a performance of his own overture in C minor. His publisher, Eugene Spitbag, was so taken by his presence at the concert, he decided to send some of Richard Strauss's piano works to the great pianist and conductor, Hans von Bülow. After going through the piano works, von Bülow sent back a letter to Spitbag that read, quote, "I thoroughly dislike them, because I miss the youthful spirit in them. He is no genius, only a talent of the sort that takes 60 to make a bushel." But, later on, Hans von Bülow would begin to take more of an interest in Richard Strauss's works for orchestra, and on November the 27th, 1882, in Dresden, Germany, von Bülow conducted Strauss's serenade in E-flat for 13 wind instruments. And after this, von Bülow asked Richard Strauss for more compositions. This is when Strauss wrote the Concerto No. 1 for horn and orchestra. And after its completion, von Bülow requested that Strauss come to Meiningen to conduct it. And after this performance, at the age of 19 years old, Richard Strauss was gaining much success as a composer, and many of his works were being performed regularly. Some of these compositions include the Violin Concerto in D minor, the Sonata in F major for cello and piano, and the Symphony in F minor that received its world premiere on December the 13th, 1884, conducted by Theodore Thomas. In the 1885 concert series, Richard Strauss became Hans von Bülow's assistant conductor, and 1 year later, in the year 1886, von Bülow appointed Strauss music director of the Meiningen Court Orchestra. And with this position, Richard Strauss was now where he wanted to be. But, as far as being a composer, Strauss would now go through a radical change of musical values. When he was a child, he had attended a performance of Richard Wagner's grand music drama, Tristan and Isolde, and he too, with his father, agreed that Wagner's music was bitter, bold, and worthless. Johannes Brahms was Strauss's childhood idol, which is apparent in his earliest works. But after a few more listenings of Tristan and a first hearing of the Walküre from the Ring Nibelungen, along with a first trip to Bayreuth, where Strauss heard Parsifal in the year 1882, Richard Strauss was blinded by the ingenious musical light of Richard Wagner. After this intervention, Wagner became Richard Strauss's musical god. This forced Strauss to reevaluate and re-examine his musical direction, and he was now totally dissatisfied with all of the previous music that he had written. It was also at this time that Richard Strauss became very close with a musician from the Meiningen Orchestra by the name of Alexander Ritter, who was also a poet and a philosopher. Ritter was a true worshiper of the Wagnerian religion, and this was probably due to the fact that he was married to Wagner's niece. After a while, Ritter convinced Richard Strauss that he should be the one to carry on the Wagnerian torch. Not only did Ritter want Strauss to carry on the idea of Wagnerian music drama, or total work of art, but he also wanted Strauss to take the Franz Liszt tone poem concept to another level. The tone poem genre is also known as the symphonic poem, which basically falls into the category of program music. Usually, this term is reserved for compositions in one movement, in distinction of the program symphony. In the year 1886, at the age of 20, Richard Strauss went to Italy. Here, he wrote his first work that incorporated the styles of Wagner with a symphonic fantasy. This work would be called Aus Italien. Aus Italien was performed and conducted by Richard Strauss on March 2, 1887, and at the end of the performance, Richard Strauss was heavily applauded by boos and hisses. Some of the comments made about the work were noisy, ugly, and confusing, and even though the piece was shunned, Richard Strauss had no intentions on scrapping his new style for his old one. He knew that this new style was his destiny, and he was sure of it. And besides, Strauss loved the controversy and the discussions about dissonance in his music. In the year 1886, Richard Strauss wrote his first tone poem called Macbeth, and in the next 10 years, he would produce 6 more in the same style that would place his name and music in the musical archives forever. These works shocked the world with their bold and dissonant ideas, and after a while, Richard Strauss began to be called the bad boy of music. These 6 tone poems are Don Juan of 1889, Death and Transfiguration of 1890, Till Eulenspiegel's Merry Pranks of 1895, Don Quixote of 1898, A Hero's Life of 1899, and Richard Strauss's most famous work that he will forever be remembered for, also Sprach Zarathustra, or Thus Spake Zarathustra, written in the year 1896. This tone poem was written in praise of Friedrich Nietzsche's prose poem with the same name. Strauss describes the work as a special tribute to the genius of Friedrich Nietzsche. Here he is quoted, "I did not intend to write philosophical music or portray Nietzsche's great work musically. I only meant to convey with the means of music an idea of the development of the human race from its origin through the various phases of evolution, religious as well as scientific, up to Nietzsche's idea of the Superman." Apparently, at this point, Richard Strauss was following this Nietzsche-Wagner philosophy where there is a strong belief in a superhuman being or race, which of course was adopted by Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party. As far as the Christian idea that frees believers of responsibility for their own actions through confession, this philosophy is no longer accepted. During Richard Strauss's tone poem period, he also wrote some pretty serious lieder or songs. And after this production of songs, Strauss turned to the field of opera, bringing along many of his wild dissonant ideas. During this period, he wrote many operas, including Arabella, The Egyptian Helen, and Electra. Most of Richard Strauss's early operas were surrounded by scandal, including Salome, which would never even make it to the stage in Vienna because the censors stopped it dead in its tracks due to the realism in text along with Strauss's unconventional modern score. Even when Salome was premiered in America, which would be its only performance, the audiences and critics called Strauss's opera gruesome, nerve-wracking, repulsive, and violent. But, as before, with a few of his other criticized works, it seemed that Richard Strauss enjoyed this criticism and felt with this bashing that his mission was being accomplished using the philosophy of good publicity is bad publicity. Just spell my name right. The Strauss opera Elektra II was beaten up pretty bad by the critics and the public. But later on, as the dust settled, people began to accept the work, and it was regarded as a masterpiece. It was right around this time that Richard Strauss met the Austrian librettist, dramatist, and poet, Hugo von Hofmannsthal. The two would create one of the strongest partnerships in opera of all time. This was because they both understood each other perfectly, and with this compatibility, their partnership lasted 20 years. After their first attempt in the year 1911, Richard Strauss and Hofmannsthal hit the world with a second opera that was completely different than anything Strauss had ever done before. This was a comical opera called Der Rosenkavalier, and it was a huge success. As Strauss was gaining the reputation as one of the most highly complicated and provocative composers of his time, he was also gaining the reputation as one of the greatest and most powerful conductors ever. And with this notoriety, he became the conductor for the Munich Opera from the year 1886 to 1889. After this position, from the year 1889 to 1894, he became the conductor at the Opera House in Weimar, and from the year 1894 to 1895, Strauss became the conductor for the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra, and he conducted at the Bayreuth Festival, which is the home of Richard Wagner's music cycles. And soon, The big one came when Strauss was offered the conducting position at the Berlin Royal Opera House, the most prestigious post in all of Europe. He stayed at that position for 12 years, and through the opera company, Strauss used his powerful musical influence and created a trade union for struggling German composers. This union would enable the composers to get paid from every performance of contemporary music by a major orchestra or opera house. This was probably the first type of ASCAP or BMI-like royalty payment organization. It was also at this time that Richard Wagner saw and heard the 17-year-old George Zal, who gave a performance as pianist, conductor, and composer with the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra. At the concert, George Zal, who would eventually become one of the greatest conductors of all time and lead the Cleveland Orchestra through decades of legendary performances, conducted the Beethoven Piano Concerto No. 5 from the keyboard. Also on that program, Zell conducted one of his own symphonies and Strauss's Till Eulenspiegel's Merry Pranks. After the performance, Richard Strauss was blown away, and he knighted Zell assistant conductor of the Royal Opera House. One of the most fascinating events in George Zell's life happened during his relationship with Richard Strauss, when in November of 1916, during the recording session of Strauss's Don Juan, Richard Strauss instructed Zell to rehearse the Berlin Royal Opera Orchestra before an early morning recording session so that Strauss could sleep in late. When the recording session was scheduled to start, unfortunately, there was no Richard Strauss, and a very ticked-off, clock-watching record executive told George Zell to start the session without Strauss. After contemplating for a minute or two, George Zell obliged, and he and the orchestra went through and recorded the first section. Eventually, Strauss did show up, and he did conduct the second half. But although it is said that Strauss was not present for the first part of the recording session, George Zell claims that he was, standing in the corner, observing and listening to Zell's interpretation. Apparently, Strauss was so moved by the performance, he instructed the producers to use the first 8 minutes of Zell's recording. Here, Richard Strauss is quoted, "Now I can die happy with a young fellow like this to take over." Between World War I and World War II, Strauss conducted and wrote opera scores. And when Adolf Hitler and the Third Reich rose to power, at first, Strauss gave his complete allegiance to the Nazi Party. During this period, Strauss became the president of the Third Reich Music Chamber and the German Federation of Composers. At this time, Strauss was in complete agreement that Judaism should be removed from German music, as he stated, unwholesome influences. When conductor Bruno Walter was kicked out of the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra, without the bat of an eye, Richard Strauss immediately substituted for him. And when conductor Arturo Toscanini refused to perform at Bayreuth due to the Nazi atrocities happening all over Europe, Strauss gladly replaced the legendary conductor. He also agreed with the Nazis that the music of composer Paul Hindemith should be banned indefinitely. But soon, Richard Strauss and the Nazis would become enemies. His first battle with the Nazis happened when he decided and demanded on collaborating with a Jewish poet and writer by the name of Stefan Zweig on an opera called The Silent Woman. During his collaboration with Zweig, the Nazis were infuriated that Strauss would lower himself to the level of working with a Jew, and they practically forbid Strauss to stage the work. But because of Strauss's world prestige, the Nazis reluctantly permitted it to be performed in Dresden on June the 24th, 1935. After the performance, Richard Strauss was immediately kicked out and stripped of his positions for the Reich. And to make matters even worse, Strauss publicly denounced the invasion of Poland. And with this, Strauss was put under house arrest, and his royalty income and his funds were taken away from him. Now, Strauss and his family had nothing, and they survived on the barest of necessities. Finally, when the Allied troops entered his town of Garmisch-Partenkirchen and came upon the house of Richard Strauss, the composer descended from his staircase and identified himself to Lieutenant Milton Weiss as the composer of Der Rosenkavalier. Ironically, the lieutenant was a musician, and he knew who Strauss was. And because of this, the lieutenant ordered that a sign be put in the front of Strauss's house that read off limits. But soon, that sign was not enough, and Richard Strauss was brought to trial because of his affiliation with the Third Reich. As many others around him, he was not found guilty, and eventually, the world did forgive Strauss for his dealings with the Nazis. And in the year 1947, in London, England, the English gave him a hero's ovation after a performance at a Strauss music festival. Richard Strauss's final opera was called Capriccio, and his last composition was called Four Last Songs, which he completed in the year 1948. In the last of these four songs, the ending line read, "Is this death?" Richard Strauss died at his villa on September the 8th, 1949. He was 85 years old. The cause of his death was uremia, and after his cremation, his ashes were buried at his villa in Garmisch-Partenkirchen. Soon after his death, the Bavarian government declared a day of national mourning. He was survived by his wife Pauline de Anna and his son Fritz. Most people who knew Richard Strauss basically didn't like him. Aside from being extremely vain, he was incredibly jealous of anyone who would try and steal his thunder. He was also a very cheap businessman, and he would hold anyone liable for their debt, even if it came down to a matter of pennies. And because his wife Pauline basically managed the family's money, Richard Strauss would supplement his income by gambling on a card game called Scat. Strauss actually forced his orchestra members to play this game against their own free will, and he usually beat the pants off of most of his band members. In Bayreuth, at a Wagner festival in the year 1933, some of the musicians suffered such severe losses from this card game that Winifred Wagner, the wife of Wagner's son Siegfried, had to reimburse the musicians the money that they lost before they agreed to perform. At the end of Richard Strauss's life, many of the young composers began to make comments that his music was pretty much outdated. When hearing of this, Richard Strauss declared in the year 1947, quote, "I may not be a first-rate composer, but I am a first-class second-rate composer." When it comes to a specific type of music, the word king is often used before many a composer's or performer's names. For instance, the great Franz Liszt deemed Frédéric Chopin the king of the piano, and in response to the compliment, the humble Chopin replied, quote, "I am a king in Liszt's empire." Scott Joplin was of course known as the king of ragtime, while John Philip Sousa, still to this day, is known as the March King. And as far as rock and roll is concerned, Elvis Presley, who usually receives the title of King before the pronouncement of his actual name, holds this throne easily. But as far as the world of waltzing is concerned, it is pretty much confirmed that His Royal Highness's name would be Johann Strauss II. Now, in my opinion, I think that if Chopin would have concentrated more on the field of waltz and studied orchestration to the extent of Strauss, he could have gave Mr. Strauss a run for his money in the art of 3/4 time. But for now, let's let Johann continue to enjoy this accolade. Johann Strauss II was born in Vienna, Austria, on October the 25th, 1825, to Johann I and Anna Strauss. His father, Johann Strauss I, was a very famous band leader and composer of the day, who became well known for his waltzes and other types of dance music. His most famous piece still known is probably the Radetzky March. His other two sons, Edward and Joseph, would later on also become musicians and composers. But of his three sons, Johann II would make a bigger name for himself than anyone from this line of Strausses. And although the young Johann Strauss began to display amazing signs of talent at a very young age, his father was adamant about all of his sons not becoming musicians, but rather bankers. But even with this, at the age of six, Strauss's mother arranged for her son to take violin lessons secretly from a violinist in his father's orchestra, by the name of Franz Ammann. But when his father found out about these lessons, apparently there was a very unpleasant violent scene that followed. And after the incident, Johann I wanted to know nothing about any of his son's musical plans. At the age of 17, his father Johann I left Strauss's mother, and he took a mistress by the name of Emily Trampisch. And although this must have been very hard on his mother, it was actually a blessing for Johann Strauss II, because he could now openly achieve the musical goals that he had set out for with much encouragement and support from his mother, who, by the way, was a good violinist in her own right. It was at this point that Strauss began to study the violin with Anton Coleman, and counterpoint and harmony with Joseph Drexler. And after 2 years of this training, at the age of 19, Johann Strauss conducted his first engagement, and 1 year later, he formed his own band, directly competing with his father. It was also at this time that Strauss began to write and perform numerous original works, including mazurkas, polkas, and waltzes. During some of these performances, Strauss II even performed some of his father's compositions, and after a short while, the critics and the audiences began to give him much praise for his efforts. Although his father, Johann Sr., occupied the position of conductor of the 1st Vienna Citizens Regiment, when Johann Strauss received his first major appointment, he became the conductor of the 2nd Citizens Regiment. And apparently, this did not sit well with his cranky father. And along with the bourgeois revolution of 1848 that seriously affected the climate in Vienna, the musical rivalry between Father Strauss and Strauss Jr. became much more intense. At the time, Johann Strauss Jr. sided with the revolutionaries, and these feelings are clearly displayed in some of his works of that time, including the Songs of Freedom Waltzes, Opus 52, and the Opus 54 and 56 marches. In the year 1849, Johann Strauss I died of scarlet fever, and with this, Johann Strauss Jr.'s real success would emerge. During this period, Strauss merged his father's orchestra with his own band, and he took control of all of his father's contracts. After this merge, things were going very well for Johann Strauss II, and his fame was increasing quickly. But 4 years later, at the age of 28, Strauss became very ill, and he had to turn over the baton to his brother Joseph for 6 months. After he recovered, Strauss jumped back into his work, and he slowly began to gain the same type of respect that many of the composers of the day were receiving, including Johannes Brahms, Richard Wagner, and Giuseppe Verdi. As far as his personal life, in the year 1862, Johann Strauss married a singer by the name of Henrietta Treffs. She eventually became his business manager, and she inspired Strauss musically, and she set him in the direction of operetta. In the next 15 years, Johann Strauss II cranked out numerous operettas, polkas, marches, and waltzes that definitely earned him the title Waltz King, including Tales from the Vienna Woods, Die Fledermaus, or The Bat, and of course, his most famous piece of music of all, probably one of the most famous tunes ever written. It is called On the Beautiful Blue Danube Waltz. Thank you. piece was composed in the year 1867, and strangely, it was only a mild success when first performed. After that performance, Johann Strauss said of the Blue Danube, quote, "The devil take the waltz. My only regret is for the coda. I wish that had been a success." Apparently, this quote meant that Strauss was not happy with the way the piece ended. The original version of the Blue Danube actually had a song text to it, with words written by Joseph Weill. But for the World's Fair of that year, Strauss changed it into a complete orchestral version that soon brought him much success. This version is usually the one that we hear today. In the year 1872, Johann Strauss II traveled to America, where he conducted many successful concerts, including New York and Boston. And although Johann Strauss was receiving much fame and success with his music, his personal life in the 1870s was a nightmare. In the year 1870, sadly, his mother and his brother Joseph died, and in the year 1878, the love of his life, Henrietta, was hit with a massive heart attack, and she died. After this, Strauss was devastated, and during this period, he was basically helpless. So, very unwisely, he immediately got into another relationship with a very young actress by the name of Angelica Dittrich. And although the marriage filled some type of void, it only lasted 4 years. Strauss did marry again in the year 1887 to a woman by the name of Adelaide Deutsch, but this marriage was not as easy to attain as Strauss thought. This was because Johann Strauss was a Roman Catholic, and the parish would not recognize his divorce. So to combat this, he left the church and went on with his plans. Adelaide, whom he lived with for a long time before their marriage, seemed to inspire Strauss, just as his first wife Henrietta, and at this point, Strauss seemed content. In his final years, Johann Strauss was very productive and active, and by the time he was in his 70s, his catalog contained over 450 works. Sadly, while working on his only ballet called Cinderella, Johann Strauss developed a bad respiratory infection that eventually turned into a pneumonia. The great Johann Strauss II died on June the 3rd, 1899. He was 74 years old. During his time, Johann Strauss was admired by many of the serious composers of the day, including Richard Wagner and Johannes Brahms, who also became a very close friend. In many biographies of both composers, a story is told about Strauss's daughter approaching Johannes Brahms for an autograph. After asking him for his signature, Brahms agreed, and he inscribed a few measures of music with his signature on her fan, which was a custom to do inside of an autograph at that time. But this time, Brahms didn't enter his own most popular work. This time he penned in a few measures from one of Johann Strauss's best-known waltzes. And after he wrote out the few bars, right beneath the music, he wrote, quote, "Unfortunately, not by Johannes Brahms." As far as the other Strauss, Richard, he too admired Johann Strauss II, and when writing his Rosenkavalier waltzes, he said of Johann Strauss II, quote, "How could I forget the laughing genius of Vienna?"